Welcome to the Mother Love Podcast. This is Claire Larson, your host, and this project was made possible because of the support of Healthy Mothers, Healthy Babies, the Montana Coalition. Mother Love was created to promote healing, connection, and shared wisdom through stories. Like any given day spent parenting, each episode brings a balance of tears, laughter, wonder, and surrender. When it comes to parenting, no one should go it alone. On Mother Love, we see you, we hear you, we're in this together. Okay, so before we dive into Kyla's episode, I just wanted to give a little heads up that this is a hard story. We do talk about some pretty painful experiences and go into detail about Kyla's preterm birth and some of the complications that went along with that. So if that is not something that will feel good to listen to right now, I do encourage you to find another time where you can care for yourself in taking in this story. Also, we decided to split this episode into two parts because really the story is so comprehensive and it covers so much. And so I wanted to let listeners know that this first part of Kyla's story has a lot to do with topics like preterm labor, secondary infertility, all the complicated emotions that go along with that. And then we go through the birth of Kyla's son, Connor, and then end the episode there. To follow this episode will be more of her focused on her experience and her family's experience of having a baby in the NICU and what that's like and some strategies and helpful insights on how to care for yourself and get through that time. Hi, Mother Love listeners. I'm here with Kyla Mackey today, and I'm really excited to have Kyla on. I'm not even really going to go too much into like trying to summarize Kyla's story because there are so many pieces to it, and it's really not one that you can make a nutshell version of. So Kyla, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're here. And will you just start by telling us a little bit about like what your day looked like today so we can kind of anchor in the present and get an idea for what modern life looks like for you and your family?
Sure. So yeah, this morning I got up around 6 a.m. Sometimes I get up when my youngest Connor, the baby, gets up. He's 6 months old. And sometimes I get up before him. But this morning I got up a little bit before him and just started getting things ready for the day, started getting ready to take the dog on a walk, and then he woke up. And so kind of shifted gears and made him a bottle. And then my husband woke up and was able to feed him so I could take the dog on a walk. And then also got my oldest son, who's 7, ready for school, made him lunch. And then in the midst of that, my oldest son said, "Oh, I'm not feeling well." Mm-hmm. So
here we go.
So said, "Okay, we'll work from home," which I kind of already planned on Fridays. I work from home, but work from home and make sure, you know, his oldest son is set up and got the baby ready for daycare, took him to daycare, and mm-hmm. then came back home. And yeah, that was kind of the morning. And
yeah, and then you have to just throw your whole plan out the window and yep. kind of go with it.
That's yeah. real life.
That's real life, right? Okay. And then so Connor's 6 months old, mm-hmm. and a lot of our story is going to focus on him and your time with him. Mm-hmm. And before we do that, we talked about maybe going back a little bit and talking about your son Declan, who is now 7, about what your experience was like with that pregnancy and that birth, to give a little bit of context that will tie into Connor's story. So will you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So Declan, my oldest, is 7. He is in first grade, going into second grade next year. Wonderful kid, you mm-hmm. know, just incredibly sweet. But yeah, with him and getting pregnant with him, just we got pregnant right away. And, you know, initially pretty typical first trimester. Towards the end of the first trimester, started getting pretty bad heartburn. And that was occurred throughout the pregnancy and definitely got worse. That's the most notable thing from that pregnancy. But I had a decent amount of energy, had trouble eating a lot of food because of the heartburn.
Right.
So had a very, very limited diet.
Yeah.
About 6 weeks before he was due, I had some indications of possibly early delivery. And so went into the doctor and they just checked things out and said, yeah, those things can happen, you know, anywhere from, you know, it can be 3 weeks to more than a month before you give birth. So, you know, we don't have any indication that it's going to happen tomorrow. But then a week after that visit, I started, you know, having some contractions, but really the thing that was most noticeable and indicative was my water started leaking. And I didn't realize exactly what that was at first, but then kind of just after it occurring over the course of the day, and it was, you know, I'd lay down and then get up and then would notice it. So then I called, and so that was about a month. So I was around 36 weeks mm-hmm. at that point.
So. And then how did labor go?
Yeah, that was, overall I was in labor about 15 hours. Mm-hmm. And after I went to the hospital and they confirmed that yes, my water had, you know, ruptured essentially. Mm-hmm. Then, you know, they wanted to deliver, and that was here in Helena. They wanted to deliver within 24 hours. So then was given Pitocin and to help progress things. And so initially was having contractions that weren't really doing much of anything. And then my water broke completely, and after that it was very intense, and active labor was very intense. And then had asked for an epidural, but then that they couldn't administer that. That was a really rough part of that.
Yeah.
and then after trying to give me the epidural, realized I was 10 centimeters, and so pushed for about 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then he was born, and he was, they initially had some concerns, him being, you know, about a month premature, some concerns about his lungs, but everything checked out. He was healthy. Mm-hmm. And then was able to, you know, he didn't need any, additional care. I think they let us stay in the hospital one extra night just because of he was considered preterm, mm-hmm. but ultimately was discharged and is healthy little baby.
Yeah. 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 That epidural moment. Whoa.
Yeah.
I think I've heard that story more times than I wish that I had, but that's mm-hmm. hard when that happens just mentally. And you know, that's a hard point mm-hmm. in labor to be wanting relief and expecting relief, and then you can't mm-hmm. have it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And trying to hold still during that process is nearly impossible.
It is.
Yeah.
It's because they can't do it too early. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be at that point when you have to sit still and you're having very intense contractions and wanted me to sit cross-legged on the bed, and that was tough, but
mm-hmm. I was shaking like uncontrollably when they were trying to give me an epidural with my first, and mm-hmm. it was hard because everyone in the room is like telling you with everything they have, like, you have to hold still. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I would if I could. I'm not in charge of my body right now, guys. Mm-hmm. This isn't like a, you know, when you're telling your little one to hold still because you're braiding their hair or something. This is different.
Right.
Yeah.
But then they also say, don't fight the contraction. Mm-hmm. Like, let it, like, it's, you know, productive. So let it
right.
work through. But you can't do both of those things, right. I feel like, at the same time.
Yeah. So. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm glad we have that part of the story, because we will kind of fast forward a little bit in time. And once we start talking more in depth about the beginning of Connor's life, we'll have that in mind. I kind of want to talk a little bit about the piece of your story that has a lot to do with timing. And I know that you guys were really excited to have another baby, but then the pandemic came and kind of changed everything that had to do with that plan.
Yeah, so with our first, I mentioned we got pregnant right away, and so we just said we need to make sure we're really ready when, you know, we start trying again. And so, yep, once we were ready and felt a sense of security with the vaccine, and were able to get vaccinated, we just started trying and sort of assumed, I guess, it would happen as quickly as the first, and it did not. And so we, you know, after about 6 months, went in to see a doctor for me, just to see if there was anything going on. Mm-hmm. And they didn't find anything initially that would contribute to that with me. And then the same with my husband. And so just continued to keep trying. Mm-hmm. For, you know, people who have experienced this, I guess, especially as getting older, the months kept going by. Mm-hmm. And every month is sort of a new setback.
Yeah.
And you go through all of those emotions again when you're really, really, it's something you're really looking forward to.
Yeah.
And I just knew this was something I wanted. I knew, you know, I wanted Declan to have a sibling, and I knew I wanted our family to be complete with two kids. And so it was just, yeah, that every month, the reminder that, mm-hmm. There's this challenge, and, you know, all the feelings of feeling like something is wrong with you, and but they can't, you know, they can't definitively put their finger on it. And so
right after several times of going through that kind of grief that happens every single month, did you learn ways to care for yourself, or did it become not easier, but did you learn ways to help yourself through that as time went on, or did it just continue to get harder and harder?
It just continued to get harder and harder. And of course, you know, it involves another person. Mm-hmm. And so not putting, I guess, that burden of my grief on my husband, but it is, a monthly, like, grief cycle. Mm-hmm. And it is, the hope. And then, mm-hmm. you know, the letdown, and like, is this symptom a sign that I, you know, because there's so
totally,
many similar
totally.
Symptoms of,
yes.
you know, having
yep.
a period and being pregnant, there's mm-hmm. a lot of overlap with some of those initial signs. So that is just one of, you know, that messes with your,
yeah.
your mind as well.
Definitely.
And to be fully transparent and honest, it just got harder.
Yeah.
And, you know, I tried to read things that, you know, I thought might help, you know, not only emotionally, but also just help with addressing the fertility, issues. And, you know, some of those things did help. And I think with a lot of things, and I didn't do this, but in hindsight, trying to find a community of mm-hmm. people going through the same
right.
thing would have been really helpful. 'Cause mm-hmm. again, all these feelings of isolation and you're the only one going through it. And then
something's wrong with me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All of that kind of shame that starts to leak in.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And we both talked about that this is more of like a technical book, but we both read Taking Charge of Your Fertility, which we'll put in the show notes. It's more of like a, like you said, like an education and like a more of like a methodology. But what was really interesting to me when I read that was how little I actually knew about my body. Mm-hmm. Like what was taught to me in like, you know, reproductive education in the seventh grade was kind of all I had. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't really educate myself that much beyond that for whatever reason. And then when it came time, I was like, oh my goodness, really? Like all this new information was new to me. And yeah. That was really interesting. And it's something that I still, as like an almost 40-year-old woman now, I still get caught off guard by like, why is my mood so, like, it's like, how many times have I had to go through this? Mm-hmm. But learning about your body and your cycle and all the amazing and complicated things that happen every single month is actually kind of can be helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. I would recommend it. Yep. To anybody, you know, who, whether you're having fertility issues or not, I think, yeah, it's a great resource. Like you said, it's very eye-opening because what you learn in, you know, middle school, seventh grade, is not, you know, is basically there's when you're on your period and when you're not, but
right
every day,
yep,
you know, there's something different in it and it can affect a lot more than just fertility. So,
right. Yep. And it takes some of the self-blame away because you learn that it like actually your body has to go through this pretty miraculous process in order for to conceive. Right. And even though I think one of the things that was hard for me is I was like, but people get pregnant accidentally all the time. But everywhere I look, there's a baby. But like, there's billions of people in the world and they were all born. Like, how come I can't do this?
Right.
You know, and when you look and when you learn like the actual specific information, it can be helpful to be like, oh, this isn't my fault. There's just a lot that goes on in bodies that is not in our control. And that was kind of helpful for me to know that too.
Yeah.
At one point it worked and you got pregnant, but right before that, were you guys starting to consider like getting some assistance, or remind me of that part of the story?
Yeah. So we had, after, I think it was about a year, it might've been a little bit more than a year of trying. I made an appointment for a specialist in Bozeman to see and talk about options for helping. And so we did make that appointment and went to the appointment. And at that appointment, the doctor also kind of did an exam and with me, and then there was an indication that I had endometriosis. And so that, you know, while it was frustrating, it also was an answer.
Yeah.
Because I think the unexplained infertility can even sometimes be more challenging. And so that was,
yeah,
that was in some ways relieving, but also, and then just having her insight into, you know, here are the options and here's what we can try. And so we left that appointment with kind of a plan.
Yeah.
And then,
which probably felt pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It did.
To have something to be able to do, like action that you could take.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, and following the appointment, there was a lot of discussion with my husband about, you know, financially what we were willing to do, because that's a whole nother part of
right.
it, is that insurance does not cover most insurance, I should say.
Yeah.
And my husband and I both have pretty good insurance. They don't cover that. So you know, it was a financial conversation, which is hard because it's, you know, very much a emotional discussion, but you're having to put numbers on,
right,
you know, something
that's always hard
that you don't want to put numbers on.
For sure.
Yeah.
And so then what happened next?
So we had a plan with the fertility doctor, and I think with most of these treatments, this is the case, is you sort of start day one when your period starts. And so I was waiting for that to happen in order to call their office and then get on sort of a schedule, and just was waiting and did not get my period. So yeah, I took a pregnancy test after, I think it was 4 days after I missed my period, and it was positive. So it was really, in that moment was very excited, you know, again, after seeing so many months of,
totally,
you know.
Yeah. And what interesting timing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah. So
that must have been really exciting.
It was. And I was, you know, I shared the news with my husband right away, mm-hmm. and we were both just relieved and excited, and excited that it's sort of at least that part of the process, of the experience was, you know, there was less uncertainty mm-hmm. at that point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then we won't go through everything that happened during your pregnancy, but I know that at some point things started to go differently than you thought. So can you talk a little bit about just the pregnancy in general and when you started to have a different experience than your first?
Yeah, so the first trimester, fairly similar. I was maybe a little more nauseous the first trimester with Connor. After that first trimester, I started feeling quite a bit better in the second trimester, and I had a decent amount of energy, and did not have the heartburn that I had with my first son. I had a little bit, but then, yes, so towards the, I guess it was the end of the second trimester, I just sort of had, I think the main thing that was notable was just really tired, mm-hmm. and a lot more tired than I was with the first pregnancy, and which seemed kind of different for me, just because it was like, okay, the second trimester I'm supposed to, you know,
right,
have more energy, and that really seemed to change, and yeah, just still was working full time, and so would go to work and then have to leave early, just being pretty exhausted by the end of the day.
Yeah.
And so all I wanted to do was just come home and lay on the couch and
rest. Yeah. I remember you even telling me that you felt like you were like falling asleep at work,
mm-hmm.
which I've had little pieces of that level of exhaustion in my life. But it's that kind of exhaustion is just like, it's like non-negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't, there's like no way to physically, you can't will your way out of it.
Right.
And be like, oh, well, I just have 2 more hours to go. Like I can do it.
Yeah.
Like when your body is that tired, there's mm-hmm. just no way around it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was sort of the main noticeable thing, mm-hmm. and mentioned it to the doctor at sort of the regular checkups, and when she said, how are you feeling? And I would mention the tiredness, but you know, it's just when everything looks okay and checks out okay on ultrasounds and on the exams, I mean, that's just okay. This is,
and there's also that thing where people are like, well, that's because you're already raising a kid and now you're pregnant. Everyone's tired.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard. It's one of those things that is hard to describe. Like, no, I think this is a different level of tired.
Yeah.
You know, it's so, Yeah, it's so nuanced.
Yeah.
Like the level of exhaustion during pregnancy that it's hard to really even tell yourself whether or not it's normal.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so that, you know, that's what I chalked it up mostly was like, okay, I'm, you know, trying to manage having another kid now when before I didn't have that to deal with. So that, yeah, that really was it. How I explained it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And then things went a little further along and there were more signs that something was different.
Yeah. So I guess in around October, so my due date was January 6th and around October, I started having, I mean, just this feeling of like compression and tightness and then heaviness in my belly. And it wouldn't be all day, but it would be at, you know, definitely, later in the afternoon, also when I was tired, but I'd feel it when I got home and it was like a compression and then release. So I thought, okay, maybe contraction, but I was like, wow, that's really early for that, you know? And so that was another thing that started happening, but it wasn't every day. It wasn't, you know, so frequent that I was, that mentally I said, okay, you know, something's really wrong. I just, again, kind of explained it away. And, you know, and maybe it was just, I don't know, but that's, yeah. So that's the other thing that started happening. And again, brought it up to the doctor and then, you know, it's just everything checked out. Okay. And so just continued on and as planned. And I think my last ultrasound, so I had more frequent ultrasounds just because of being older. And so, you know, I think my last ultrasound that I had was at 30 weeks, I want to say.
And then things got really real.
Yeah. So at, so on November, early in the morning on November 16th, so I was right at about 32 weeks pregnant. I, you know, had gone to bed and woke up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, which was common, and went to the bathroom and then came back to bed and noticed like, there was again, some leaking. And I was, you know, this was around 4 a.m. And so I was like, oh, I'm just, you know, again, trying to explain away things. But in pretty short order, I realized that's exactly what was happening and probably had another rupture. So I called the emergency OB on call and she said, yeah, you need to go into the hospital. So I scrambled. I think by this time it was 4:30 or so in the morning. You know, that 4 to 4:30 felt like a really long time.
Totally.
It's like it took me forever to make this decision to call, but really it only took about 5
time
minutes.
Time gets weird in moments like that.
It gets really weird. And so I went and told, he was sleeping. My husband was sleeping downstairs cause I just was kind of taking over the whole bed with all my pillows and stuff. But, and so I went downstairs and told my husband and he's like, okay. And said, I'll drive myself to the hospital cause we have our older son. And he said, are you sure? And said, yeah, I just gotta go right now. And so I got to the hospital here and they just wanted to confirm that I indeed was, that my water had ruptured and that was the case. And so then I think it was a nurse who came in and said, we can't do anything here. So you're going to have to be flown to either Great Falls or Missoula. And so we had, my husband and I both grew up in Great Falls, so we had family there. So I said, I'd like to go to Great Falls if they, you know, have space. And so,
yeah. Whoa. So this is like what time do you think when you are told that you need to fly?
So that took a little, a little longer. So I think it was 6:30 or so in the morning mm-hmm. by this time. So about 2.5 hours after everything. And so they had to figure out a lot of the logistics with the flight would be coming from Great Falls. And so they had to figure logistics between the two hospitals. And
Yeah. And so a plan was hatched mm-hmm. where you were going to be flown. Mm-hmm. And then your husband would have to drive there. Is that right?
Yeah. So my husband and my older son, and the whole time I was communicating with my husband either through text mm-hmm. or I was able to call him a couple of times to keep him updated on what was going on. And so by that time, when we were able to figure out that I was going to Great Falls, he had sort of already packed, you know, some bags and was able to get some things ready. But yeah, he would drive there to Great Falls with my son and meet me at the hospital there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you talk about what it's like to have to be flown in that moment? Like, do you remember that experience? And just will you talk a little, like, slow it down a little bit and just describe? Because I can't imagine. Mm-hmm. That feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it had to be so surreal and just,
it was surreal. Yeah. And I've never had, you know, an emergency medical issue like that yeah. before. So that was a new experience. Also, you know, very scary.
Yeah.
Because when everything that led up to this happened and realized, you know, that my water had ruptured and, you know, I was technically in labor, that could happen at any time. And right. so being right. moved from one location to another
right.
was, yeah, it was, pretty scary. And, you know, and then it's a pretty small plane. And so you have to just kind of scrunch up to get into the door, and I was on a, you know, stretcher yeah. to get out there. And so, yeah, it's just all this going into this unknown yeah. of like, okay, I realize that this is the safest thing for me and the baby is to go to somewhere where they, you know, have the capacity to deal with a preterm baby, but also, you know, just that concern of, am I going to give birth, yeah. you know, on the flight yeah. or what yeah. happens? And do they like,
right.
are they prepared for that?
Right.
Yeah. And so they did give me some magnesium.
Yeah.
beforehand, before I got on the flight to help, slow down the contractions and the labor. And so, which, was necessary, but physically that was also hard
yeah.
and challenging.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah. And then you got there.
Mm-hmm.
How long after you got there was your husband able to be there?
He was there pretty much right away.
Cool.
So, you know, by the time I got to Great Falls, it was around 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. And I think he had left Helena around 8, and then he stopped at my in-laws' house, and my older son was at the in-laws' house so that my husband could go up to the hospital. So, that timing was good, just that he was able to get.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then here's one of those stories where I don't have to ask a lot of questions yeah. in between, because this is how it went down. Mm-hmm. So once you're there.
Yeah. So once I was there, I guess I should say to just rewind a little bit to the hospital and Helena. They had given me also a steroid shot, and that's to help the baby's lungs.
Right.
Knowing that the lungs and the breathing are the biggest concern with preterm babies at that gestation, and so the goal is to get 2 shots of the steroid on board before the baby's born, but they have to space the shots 24 hours apart. So they pretty much just do that right away. And they were able to do that in Helena. And then anyway, so I was in Great Falls and had that shot on board. And then the doctor came into the room and just said, the plan is just to not try to delay things or intervene too much. Hopefully you won't, you know, maybe there, he said, hopefully there would at least be a day or two so we can get this other shot on board. But if you deliver today, then, you know, we'll, you deliver today. Just kind of let things happen and just kind of sit there and wait to see what happens.
Yeah.
And so, but he did say once, you know, there's been a rupture of the membranes that typically women will deliver within 48 hours. So,
yeah. Gosh, that must have been so hard to want your body to stop doing what it was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But you have no control over that.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that piece was just really, not ready for it, and all of the, you know, just concerns about the baby and about me, and then just not being ready, and wanting your body just to stop. Is there, you know, just thinking in my mind, is there anything they can do to,
right,
you know, stop this? I've heard about women being on bed rest,
yeah,
and you know, for weeks, and then they are able to deliver, you know, at term or. But, you know, that's different scenarios.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was the realization that my body was just going to do what it was going to do.
And it's one of those things, right, where when you're pregnant, you, from the very beginning, we imagine what the birth will be like and what it will be like to meet this little one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of this reel that plays in your head all the time. And I think that when things go differently, whether it's a little differently or really drastically different than what you expect, it's one of those things that's really hard to reconcile.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, this is happening, but this is not at all how I was expecting it or wanting it to happen. And so then you're kind of caught in between, like, your hope and the reality, and trying to accept that while you're also in, like, intense physical sensation is just so much.
It is.
Yeah.
And with my first, I had, first son, I had started a birth plan, but he was a month early.
Right.
And so that didn't go according to plan. With this one, I decided not to even try to do a birth plan, because that's almost, and I'm not saying not to do a birth plan,
right,
but that's almost was more of a letdown. And so, but at the same time, there is this idea of how things should happen.
Yeah.
And then when that doesn't happen, it is in the moment, it's just trying to think about all of the things that could happen. And I mean, the true fear and concern and worry.
Yeah.
And, is this all going to be, you know, for naught?
Right. Yeah.
So.
And then Connor came.
Yeah. So I mean, from other than being 2 months early, I mean, things were pretty standard from a delivery standpoint. Emotionally, it was a lot harder for me. That the fear about what would happen after was very emotionally hard. And I think that affected my physical pain too.
Of course.
So it just, the memory is being in a lot more physical pain than I was even with Declan, and even with the, you know, issue with the epidural, that was painful, but it just, this felt a lot more intense they had given me some medicine to help with the pain of the just contractions, but they were just becoming very, very intense by, I'd say, around like 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like forever, and nothing seemed to be progressing things, because they check me every so often and I was still just 3 centimeters, and you know, and then all of a sudden at, I think a little before 8 p.m. like, oh, you're 10 centimeters and we need to move you to a different room because mm-hmm. you're not in a delivery room.
Yeah.
So, and they didn't want me to push too early as they were like transitioning me. So that was really challenging. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, after just about 20 minutes, he was born and I heard him cry and I felt a big sense of relief when that happened and I could see him. And then they kind of showed him to me and had my husband and I were there and had us look at him. And yeah, I mean, and then, yeah, this is just kind of probably one of the harder parts of the whole story.
Okay, and we're going to pause there and we will continue the rest of Kyla's story on next week's episode. Please come back and listen. Thank you to our incredible editor and producer, Brooke Boone Miller, for sharing her gifts with us. She's a mom and she gets it, and for that we are so grateful. If you are seeking supportive parenting resources, please visit hmhb-lifts.org, an online guide meant to connect Montana families to services and programs throughout the state. It's okay not to be okay. Help is within reach, and you don't have to go this alone. We promise. And if Mother Love speaks to you as much as we hope it does, please consider supporting this project by subscribing to the podcast, sharing it with your network, and or writing us a quick review. We are passionate about getting these stories out into the world, and we need you to help us spread the word. Oh, and just one more thing. We know a lot of moms who are really fired up about creating change in the maternal healthcare world. If you feel inspired to make a donation to this movement, please go to hmhb-mt.org/donate or click the link in the show notes. Even just a $5 or $10 donation can make a huge difference. Imagine a future where mothers and caregivers feel supported, seen, and heard as they carry out the most important work of their lives.